Hello everyone. This is Francisco Arias, Director of Technical Services within the Global Domains Division at ICANN. We're going to give a brief update on universal acceptance, followed by a discussion panel on the topic. This is the agenda for today. So let's start for talking what is universal acceptance. In the context of ICANN, we started this effort on universal acceptance a few months ago. And one of the things that we first realized is that there were different opinions among the community about what the problem was that we needed to solve. So we started a discussion, and the community came back to us saying there are three issues that this initiative needs to take into account. First is the lack of support for all TLDs within applications and internet services. Second issue is lack of support for internationalized domain names in general, not just IDN TLDs, but IDNs at all levels. And the third issue that community wanted ICANN to work on is the lack of support for internationalized email, seen as the potential killer application for IDNs, but a protocol in itself that has its own complications. So with this, we publish a roadmap describing the objective of the initiative, which can be described in these three goals that are, not surprisingly, directly mapping from the three issues that the community identified for us. And so these are the goals of the Universal Acceptance Initiative: to work on promoting the support in applications and services for all TLDs, IDNs, and internationalized email. We published this roadmap that was a subject of public comment within the community. The updated roadmap was published just a few weeks ago. Besides the goals, the interesting things to mention about this roadmap is that the intention is to foster discussion here, elevate the awareness of this issue to the same level as IPv6 and DNSSEC have been for ICANN, to promote, among other things. In this roadmap, we recognize that the issue of universal acceptance is far beyond the what ICANN itself, the corporation, can do to solve the issue. This is a big issue that needs the cooperation of all the entities that may be interested in this topic, namely the very same TLD registries that are interested on having their perhaps the primary interested parties in having this universal acceptance support. We have a new website with some new content, and we are planning to have more content as we produce it later. So now let's talk about a couple of issues that we are dealing when working in this initiative. We are working right now on developing a communications plan. In the roadmap, we identified seven groups of stakeholders that will need to be reached out in regards to this topic, going from perhaps the obvious, the software and service vendors and providers, to the end users and everyone in between. But one of the difficulties has been is how do we measure success? How do we measure universal acceptance? We have been thinking on and have heard suggestions from the community, but I don't think we have yet a good idea on how do we go about this problem. We could have some kind of census in which we go and check all the applications to see what is the level of support they have for the three problems that we mentioned before. However, there are some limitations to this this topic. Is we probably cannot go and make a census of all the applications that exist over there. That's probably too much of a job. Who knows? So one of the ideas that has come up, and we are by no means settled on it, it's just one idea to throw here, and we would like to hear your feedback is on this and any other ideas you may have, is we were thinking on some sort of self-assessment that we could define and that could be published and promoted with the different software and service providers so that they can assess themselves the level of support they have for universal acceptance. Like I said, we are more than open to hear comments and ideas on how to go about this problem. Now, since we are planning to go and talk with a big number of people, these seven stakeholders, and ask them to offer support for these technologies, we were thinking, well, perhaps before going and talking with them, or at the same time as we go and talk with them, we start leading by example and have our own house in order, as we say in Mexico, where I'm from. So we need to lead by example, and one of the things that we need to have is ICANN itself, the contracted parties, the registries, the registrars. We should show the world what does it mean to offer universal acceptance, have our systems and services upgraded to support universal acceptance, support all TLDs, IDNs, internationalized email. So at least in the case of ICANN, we are already starting the work. One of the things we're going to do is have our standard contractor template to include language that requires that every new software or service that is delivered to ICANN will have support for these three technologies. And we are also starting work on a plan to upgrade our existing services systems to support the goals of universal acceptance. So that's in the case of ICANN what we are starting to work. And this week, and actually before, during the what is called, there is an initiative that in place by my colleagues in the Registry Services area, called the Registry Roadshow. It's a series of three presentations, meetings, one in LA, the other was in Tokyo, and there is one more coming in Istanbul. And that's directed to the registries. In that roadshow, we have been presenting about this topic and calling the registries for action in affecting these changes in their own systems so they can show the world how this can be supported. And also another important thing is to create demand, show the providers that there is interest on having these technologies to be supported. During this week, we also went to the registries and the registrars once again to ask them their support for universal acceptance. Well, with this, let's now go to the panel. Let me pull this up. Let's start with Jotan Frakes, Mozilla Foundation volunteer in the public suffix list. Jotan.
Thank you very much, Francisco. I was very delighted to see the growing efforts, and the growing support and resourcing that's being put towards this important cause of universal acceptance for all the new TLDs and existing TLDs and IDN TLDs, as well as international email. It's very, very good to see that. It's very inspiring. It is something that I've been doing as a volunteer since 2006. I got involved with IDN, and I was introduced to something called the Mozilla Public Suffix List. It's a list of top-level domains or suffixes that enhance the IANA Public Suffix List. The IANA list, a list of TLDs that includes ccTLDs and TLDs like COM, gTLDs, and then the public suffix list was created to fix and remedy a security issue around cookies that would occur when you went and descended further. Many of the CCTLDs have a more diverse and a variety of ways that they will work with their substrings. So within UK, and they've recently liberalized this, but they would have co-UK or org-UK or AC-UK. So whereas one list might say only UK, the other would go in and descend into the variety of different strings. Because for security purposes, while you might, if you're Amazon.com or another large online vendor, want to be able to share cookies across Amazon.com, you may, if you were Amazon.co.uk, not want somebody other than you to have cookies shared across co-UK. And it created security issues. And so the browsers reached up, created this file that had this detail in order to solve a security problem. And the uses for this file have grown over the years. The file needed editing. It was a group. Mozilla is a volunteer organization. It's a group of developers globally, every country, every language. And they didn't have an overlap, though, with this industry within IANA and ICANN. And I did. And so I had the opportunity to step up and volunteer my time towards helping to mesh those worlds together. Now, recently, we've increased the velocity of introduction of domain names into the root, which is going at quite a nice pace, and I compliment ICANN on that pace. And I'm not complaining about the rate of adoption of TLDs up until 2014 in the root. However, the pace was quite notably different. It's remarkably many more strings are being added. And so what I'm talking about at this moment is about general TLD acceptance. This list, the public suffix list and the IANA list, each get updated and used by software within browsers, within search engines, within a variety of different developers and integrators use this list for security purposes, for identification of what is a domain and what is a unique portion of a domain. We were able, and grateful to ICANN for the help in this, be able to align the pace of the updates of the public suffix list through their help with something that updates at the pace of the contracting rate that ICANN currently has. The team with Francisco, and thank you, Francisco, for the help from your team, we were able to have a CSV file that gets updated twice daily, I believe. Four times daily. Goodness. And then we're able to take that and update our file with more frequency to keep up with the pace of new TLDs. As Francisco had demonstrated, there are browsers that have different behaviors. I can talk towards Mozilla, and I'm glad to talk with each of you. I have a very brief amount of time, but anyone who wants to talk afterwards, I'm glad to. But browsers have different activity that they perform. Some, like Safari by Apple or Chrome by Google, have an integrated search and domain lookup function within the location bar. Others, like Mozilla or Internet Explorer, simply perform a DNS lookup or do less type of activity with the URI. In the case of the public suffix list and how it's used within browsers, that's often something that's used to route where that traffic goes. For some of the new TLDs as they're launching, when you go to type something dot that new TLD, depending upon what browser you're using and on what platform, you might see either a DNS error or you might see a search page that you're directed to, as was evidenced on the slide. And that has to do with the presence sometimes in the public suffix list or in the IANA suffix list and how the software will incorporate it. Now, there were a finite number of domains for a very, very long time. And you can't fault developers for trying to be efficient, and many of them were. They incorporated a very efficient process to parse what was a domain or was not a domain. But in this new era of the internet, where we have this pace of adoption and growth, there's new ways that are necessary. And the public suffix list is one of the ways that people are doing that to be able to validate that a domain is what portion of the domain is a domain and is it actually a valid domain. And a lot of times this protects you from getting spam or other things that you don't want to get and also helps you get to the places you do want to get. To conclude, The work with the public suffix list is just the tip of the spear. You know, there are many programming languages that incorporate it. There are libraries for Ruby and PHP and Perl, because it's the one, I say, the least awful resource out there that's publicly maintained and available. Many, many different open source libraries include it and incorporate it. And so with this small work that I'm able to volunteer my time with and with the help of ICANN, we're able to do quite a lot to affect programs, form validation, and other things that are derivative uses and incorporations of this file. So I thank ICANN for their help in keeping this updated and the future evolutions of this file, because I think that this is going to be very helpful when programmers are incorporating this library. It accelerates the process of universal acceptance. I'm grateful for your time. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jotun. Now I will pass the microphone to Brent London. Brent is a program manager at Google, where he works on acceptance for new ETLDs, internationalized domain names, and internationalized email addresses at Google. The most recent change in this area is Gmail support for third-party internationalized email addresses. He'll be talking today about some of the unique challenges of internationalized email addresses and why they present different problems than IDNs. Brent?
Thank you, Francisco. So, like Jonathan, I'm very excited about ICANN's proposal to coordinate some of the efforts and encourage adoption. I think that some of the problems that Google has run into while adding support for email address internationalization are coordination problems. We need some authoritative body to help tell us what is right. And in general, the IETF does a good job, but there are some gaps. So what I intend to share today is some examples of where we've run into those problems and where we need that coordination. So just for anybody in the room who's unfamiliar with the way internationalized domain names work, when you type an internationalized domain name into your web browser, what's actually going on behind the scenes is a DNS lookup is being performed on an ASCII encoded form. So the nice thing about this is the applications that you're using don't necessarily need to support internationalized characters. So if you're dealing with systems that don't actually have the correct fonts or aren't designed to work with internationalized domain names, the user will end up seeing this puny code form on the bottom. It's encoded and it's ugly, but it actually will generally work. And in the context of email, when we're talking about just internationalized domain name email, much of this is exactly the same. So if you have an ASCII local part and you have an internationalized domain name, the domain name itself can be encoded using puny code. Where we really run into problems is when we move to the left side of the at symbol. So on the left side of the at symbol is the local part. The local part has a few notable characteristics that make it different from just internationalized domain names. One is that, unlike general convention, it's case sensitive. And the interpretation of the local part is entirely up to the destination mail server. So, for example, if you are a Yahoo Mail user and you send an email to a Gmail user, Gmail disregards any periods that you put. So, for example, if you put, corgi.crazy@gmail.com, it'll go to the same location as corgicrazy@gmail.com. And that's because the Gmail product team made a decision to disregard that and doesn't rely on any other systems to support that. That's just all interpreted on the Google side. In general, though, these local parts don't need to be case insensitive, so capital letters could, in theory, be treated as a different mailbox. You could have spaces. You could have, if you enclose the local part in quotation marks, you can put a space in there. You can have special characters. So even though a lot of these are not common practice, they do exist, and it presents some sort of problem when it comes time to standardize activities, particularly when you're dealing with systems that don't support internationalized characters. So in this case, we have a fully internationalized email address with Cyrillic characters on the left side of the domain name. What you cannot do is encode this in puny code and expect that it's just going to work. For the same reasons that I discussed before, the interpretation of whatever is on the left side of the at symbol is totally up to the destination mail server, and there's no standard that says this is the way it's supposed to work for email addresses. So this presents some serious adoption problems, because if you have an email system that supports internationalized email addresses and you want to send a message to somebody who doesn't, there's no clear way that you can actually do that. Each mail system is required to come up with its own method of doing this. So one potential way to solve this problem is to issue separate email aliases that are written using Latin characters to users who also have an internationalized email address. But that doesn't help somebody who's trying to reach you and, say, only has your internationalized email address but can't send using whatever their mail client may be. Another example of where there's a lack of coordination and it's going to potentially present some problems down the road is with directionality. So if we deal with a completely Latin email address, it's pretty straightforward how one should interpret this. In the context of, say, a fully Arabic email address or any right-to-left email address, you'd start on the right-hand side and read through to the left. So in this case, the domain name is on the left-hand side. This gets kind of confusing if you have both Latin characters and Arabic characters. I mean, you could parse this and figure out, okay, there's a dot in the right-hand side. That one's definitely got to be the domain. Where it gets totally crazy is if you happen to have a local part that contains characters that also are a top-level domain. So in this particular example, both Shabaka and .co are valid TLDs. So if you were to actually print this on a piece of paper and hand it to somebody, even if they completely speak Arabic, there's no way to actually figure out where this is supposed to go, the domain names on the left or the domain names on the right. And even the context in which it's printed doesn't necessarily give that information. So in a right-to-left context, it's still not clear. You should continue reading from right to left. Sometimes you might want to jump from the left to the right, and many Arabic users would be used to doing this. This doesn't present a problem in terms of taking immediate next steps. It's possible to get an email from point A to point B without having these solved. But the problem is if everybody starts interpreting these problems and solving them differently, we start to have lots of different systems behaving inconsistently. Just as an example, over the course of the past 3 days, I've had conversations with people who very strongly believe that email addresses should never run from right to left, people who very strongly believe that email addresses should always run in the language in which they're in the context in which they're presented. So smart people thinking about the same problem can come to completely different conclusions, and we need an authoritative source about this. So I'm thrilled that ICANN is working on these resources. I'm also excited for Google to play a part in this as well.
Thank you, Brent. Now let's go to Wang Wei. Wang Wei is the CTO of CNIC and co-secretary of the Chinese Domain Name Consortium, and he's now serving as the chair of the CGP and member of the ERSAC caucus. Wang Wei.
I'd like to introduce application of the EAI, International Email Address, so far. We have, since the new DTLD, we have already have many internationalized domain name and TLD. And of course, I expect that there are going to be more applicants for the internationalized email address, because I think people want EAI not only because for the email application, but they probably want use a localized email address to apply for the some ID or account for the social network. In some scenario, the localized ID means a lot. It's the localized ID is welcomed by the end user. Anyway, we already have some IETF RFC listed on the slide, RFC for the framework and the SMTP and POP extension, IMAP extension, and email head and delivery status, something like that. And I'd like to thank the support from the from Google and the engineers from Microsoft, Opera, Sun, AT&T. Thanks for the Postfix who supports EAI in July. And of course, CNIC sponsored this project. And if you're interested in the new Postfix version, you can download this version from its homepage. And thanks for Gmail, who supports the EAI in August. And in China, in 2012, when we cooperated with the biggest email software vendor in China, and its name is Cormail, and published a version who support the EAI. And if every service provider email address email service provider can support the email address, we will have a better situation than what is now. But we still have some problems to solve. The first problem is that there are some servers have support EAI, and the EAI mail can be transported between these servers. But the major client software such as Outlook still doesn't support EAI. The end user will not choose to use that without the client, with a client support. And as I mentioned, that maybe not only the email client is supposed to support EAI, in the future some instant message service or instant message client should be supporting the EAI as well. The second problem is about the email service registration, and some email service provider has supported EAI, but there are still no free public registration on EAI. The end user can not register an internationalized mail address on the service. And I just talked with our Google friend. I think maybe Google has already have a plan when or how. To open this registration service for the end user. So there are still a lot to do. And Scenic has initiated a project called Development of Multi-Language Email Addressing Technology in APEC, and we got the support from USA, from Russia, from Korea, and from Malaysia. And this year, end of October, we will host the APEC EAI workshop in Beijing. Yeah, if you are interested in this project, welcome to Beijing and join us. And contact with Dr. Yao Jianxiang, who is the author of the SMTP extension. This is his email address. Thanks.
Thank you, Wenwei. Now we have David Crocker. David Crocker is principal with Brandenburg Internet Working. He has authored more than 50 ITF RFCs and served as an area director for the ITF. Over the past 4 years, he contributed to early internet research, led product development efforts, and founded several startups, serving as CEO for one. They've created and operated two national email services designed to others, and was CEO of a community nonprofit ISP. David is a co-recipient of the 2004 IEEE Internet Award for his work on email. In the late 90s, David was appointed by John Postel to the pre-ICANN International Ad Hoc Committee and edited its report. The committee coined the term GTLD, created the concept of a register split, and the framework for the dispute resolution policy. David?
Thank you. Good afternoon. So I think they schedule a session like this, which concerns a topic that has had some problems, so that you can have the last session of the day want you to get to the happy hour afterwards that much more. My first full-time job was in the computer science department down the road at UCLA in the early ARPANET, the predecessor to the internet. And I was at that point a college dropout, and I was doing user support and documentation. And the best document development environment that was available was up in the San Francisco Bay Area at the Engelbart ARC Research Center. That's the group that invented the mouse. And so I taught the secretaries to use that. And we would print documents off on the high-speed line printer that was next door in the computer center. In order to connect them, we had to take the document from SRI and ship it down to Information Sciences Institute, the system they had there. That's in Marina Del Rey, also down the road in a different direction. The secretaries complained to me that this was only working about half the time. And I was at a loss to understand this, so I asked my office mate, who was finishing his doctorate, a fellow named John Postel. And John said, well, this is interesting. Let's try to figure out what might be failing. And we went through a sequence of cumulative probabilities. We considered how reliable our machine was, how reliable the computer center machine was, how reliable SRI was, and ISI, and the network itself. And we made some fairly rough guesses in each case. And astonishingly, the cumulative probability came out at 0.5. which is exactly what the secretaries were reporting. This was my introduction to critical path analysis. And that is a factor that we often ignore when we design changes for the internet infrastructure. The discussions you've had so far have been essentially in the deep details of IDN and EAI. And so in typical internet fashion, I'm going to go from the bottom up. They've been doing the bottom. I'm going to go up. And I'm going to go high enough up that my comments are not directly about IDN or EAI, but about getting changes to any infrastructure. The title says DNS. The examples refer to the DNS. In fact, I thought it was ironic that there was the reference earlier in one of the slides to making this topic, the current topic, elevated in awareness to the same level as IPv6 or DNSSEC. For those who don't know, work on DNSSEC began in 1990. We are 24 years later and have what I think should be called reasonably poor adoption. IPv6 also began in 1990 and has also some problems in its adoption. And so raising things to that level, I think, mostly raises the challenge of gaining widespread changes to the existing global infrastructure. Let's see if I can, speaking of changing infrastructure, there we go. So this slide seeks to make clear that when we want to change an infrastructure, we have quite a lot indeed to change. We have the client and the server applications, of course. The user might well need changing. The examples that were given in the slide of what users might have to type is an example of users needing educating. The folks who administer those systems need to change their procedures, but also their administrative tools need to be changed. So we had the example of needing to be able to register EAI addresses and having that be a barrier. And the administrative tools for changes to the DNS infrastructure is often a major barrier. We've run into that any time people wanted to put in something unusual. For DKIM, even using a TXT record, just being able to have an interface that allows users to specify that, never mind an interface that actually makes that easy. And this is true for every single change. And so for years, we've had the core of the DNS experts community saying that there's no trouble supporting new RRs, new resource records. But in fact, the support surrounding the mechanisms that that we need for RRs have often been a barrier. And underneath these applications, then we have the entire DNS itself. And for many of these changes, such as IDN, we need to change every single resolver and caching resolver and every single server that's in the sequence. And that's just the beginning of what makes this fun. More serious is the fact that I don't know how to click, is that all of these different systems are under independent control of different people. And we have to recruit each one of those people, each one of those groups, to make these changes. And if any one of them doesn't, the system does not work. And you'll notice that I have down users and operations and developers and servers. I don't happen to have designers. because I took it as a given that the challenge here is gaining adoption for the existing specifications. But the larger challenge in the world that I tend to work in places like the IETF, is worrying about how to design things that minimize the number of places that need to do the adoption. There are times you have no choice. You must make a change to the deep infrastructure. And for something like IDN, we're pretty much in that place. But there are times when we do have choices. And this slide tries to make clear, if you can avoid people in the critical path, you need to do that. Given that we have all of these people in the critical path, then the question is, who are they? Who are each of the adopters? We've had examples given throughout the other talks of browser modules and servers and administration. Who are each of the actors that need to make changes? But then comes the hard part. What's their motivation for making the change? Each of these places will not make a change just out of the goodness of their heart. We have open source, well-intentioned activities in the internet. We rely on that. But that's not enough for the kind of complexity that I had in the previous slide. And so while the idealistic efforts have served a critical role and will continue to, that's not enough to get a global change to a critical infrastructure service. We need business cases that motivate people to make the changes. Sometimes the business case is, my users are beating me up. And in fact, that's one of the best business cases. Businesses are very responsive to users who might go away. Even in free services where the users don't supply money, the users represent money. The fact that the provider makes the money somewhere else, if users are sufficiently irritated that they leave, then that's loss of revenue. What we have tended not to have in the case of IDN or EAI or many of the other infrastructure changes is developing that business case sufficiently that it motivates the businesses to make the changes. That's the piece that we need to focus on. And it's a marketing kind of work. It's not a technical kind of work. And that's all. I guess it isn't.
Thank you, Dave. Well, after this presentation, the work ahead seems daunting. I guess because it is. The analogy to the work on IPv6 and DNSSEC and the difficulties there, I think is a good one. I think gives a perspective of the timeline that we are we had ahead of us in solving these kind of issues that are so big in scale. So with this, I would like to go to the discussion part of this panel. I have a few questions here, but anyone in the public, please feel free to jump to the microphone and fire.
I sat at the right place, I think. So my name is Don Hollander, and I have... I will be from the APTLD in this discussion. And I have many questions and comments from your presentation. So first of all, I agree with Dave Crocker that if you're looking to elevate this to the achievement pace of the IPv6 or DNSSEC, that's very, very worrying indeed, because it's taken many, many, many years to get to a very, very low acceptance space in the DNSSEC and the IPv6. So I'd hope that universal acceptance goes a bit faster there. You asked for measures, how to measure, how to identify progress. I do point you to the URID UNESCO report that they produce each year on IDN achievements. They've been producing it for a number of years. They have clear metrics on how they measure acceptance. It remains poor, but there is an existing methodology and metrics, and there's history there. So the URID UNESCO report. I quite like that you're keen for a sense of urgency from ICANN. I would suggest that ICANN try to take the topic to Silicon Valley, given that ICANN has an office here. It would have been nice to have a meeting in LA during the ICANN meeting. Didn't happen. But perhaps your group can identify an opportunity in the Silicon Valley, working with Google. I know that Google has a small community of other people focusing on IDNs already. So take it to that community and then share the results with the rest of the community and perhaps your remote participation that is very good. In New Zealand, we have a saying, you call it getting your house in order. We call it eating your own dog food. And you've indicated that ICANN is going to require all new software solutions to be IDN compliant. When do you expect to have IDN compliance in your email systems so that somebody with an IDN address can subscribe to ICANN's newsletters and so forth? I think the idea of creating a clearinghouse for bug reports is marvelous. And I don't know, I would like to send balloons and rockets up with that idea because there needs to be some place where people can report that. So that clearinghouse, and then you can pass that on to the users. That's marvelous. So thank you very much. Just a couple of two other questions. Jonathan, we heard that IANA updates its CSV file 4 times a day. How often does Mozilla load that up? So that's another question. And Brent, I was a little confused between you and CNN's presentations because you're saying there's no standards on how to interpret an email address. And we heard from CNN that there are these 6 IETF standards. So I would like just a little clarity there. Very much. So those are my questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Don. I got 3 questions for me, but would you like to quickly answer your question?
I have an easy answer, so let me get that out of the way. Don, thank you for asking. The Mozilla public suffix list is updated as frequently as every week or 2 weeks or monthly, as the volunteers have an opportunity to go and do it. We certainly have expedited it in the time since. However, that's about the pace it is.
Okay, yeah. I thought that you
intended
it was an automated process.
No, we have automation to generate the section of the new TLD section, and then we basically add that in. We have a rather complicated process because we use a change management system so that we can roll them back because it has the opportunity to affect quite a large number of things. So we're very careful. Yeah.
And your other question was, how do I reconcile the list of RFCs with the lack of standards? So I'll just clarify what I meant. There's a lack of standards regarding what's allowed in the local part of the email address. And to the left, in a left-to-right email address, it's to the left of the at symbol. So that's because that string or that substring is locally interpreted by whatever mail server receives the message. So Gmail does not care what you put to on the left-hand side. Only the destination mail server cares. Gmail meaning you're sending from Gmail. The client I'm using doesn't care. And then there were 2 particular examples of where we could use some standards. One is the bidirectional email addresses. Then the other is how to deal with legacy systems that don't support internationalized characters. So, yeah, there are plenty of standards defining how mail works. It's just this one component could use a little bit more rigor. And the question was, is that an opportunity for the IETF? I think it is potentially an opportunity for the IETF, although I don't think that it needs to be constrained to one organization if there are other opportunities to collaborate. Really, just being coordinated and aligned is more important than the branding from my perspective.
I think Dave wants to chime in.
So this is a comment about the suffix list, and it doesn't offer any immediate relief. But there is an effort that is trying to get started in the IETF to find an alternative method of having the DNS itself contain the information that is equivalent to the suffix list. And there's some active discussions going on. The effort itself is not moving very quickly. So if there is progress made, it won't be anytime soon. But it's worth your at least knowing about it.
And
I think he's just.
Yeah, it's a debound mailing list. I got three questions to ICANN, and let me see if I don't miss anything here. Regarding the EuroID report, we have looked at it. My recollection of it is that it's about the penetration of IDNs. Rather than whether those IDNs are supported in applications, which is what this is about. Regarding the comment about the conference, point taken, what we have thought so far, and please let me know if you think differently, is that instead of trying to bring the software vendors and service providers to one place where they may not have the business case or the interest to come, is rather we go there where the events they have and give the message there. We think that's probably a better use of resources. Second, regarding the support for international email address, yes, we have it in the plan. If you have... I wonder, do you already have that in your systems? Just curiosity. Very good. I usually get the answer no when I ask this question, but you beat me this time. Winnie?
We have a few remote comments and questions, so I'll read three and then queue up again to give others a turn. The first one's from Edmund. It is very encouraging to see the progress on this important project. I look forward to this topic making progress at the ICANN board level, as well to make sure that the Jake report they have received early this year could be formally adopted. I believe it should add even more concrete measures and substance for ICANN on this issue, which speaks directly to the issue of consumer trust. In terms of the priorities as listed by this roadmap, I have mentioned this previously as well. I urge ICANN to focus on the universal acceptance of IDN, including IDN in emails, and that I am confident will automatically address the issue of ASCII TLD acceptance already. By focusing on IDN, however, we have the opportunity to take it to a level that would enjoy community-wide support, bringing together the CCNSO, ALAC, GAC, even the RIRs to join the cause. Ultimately, we are clear that this is not an issue that ICANN nor the immediate ICANN community alone can solve, but we, if acting in a united front across the community, can proactively drive the acceptance of IDN.
Thank you. I'm not sure there are...
It sounds like a statement.
Yeah, I didn't hear exactly a question there, but thank you.
May I comment?
Sure.
So what Edmund said, Edmund Chung has done a great deal to advance the cause of IDN, and he should be recognized for that. One thing that I do think needs to happen, though, is the parallel of the ASCII as well as the IDN, because of the frequency and volume of each are different. So we can't pause the efforts on the ASCII while the IDN things are being addressed. In the case of the public suffix list, it would be because of the pace, the ICANN is being very efficient about contracting and making sure that the TLDs are coming. And if we were to focus purely on IDN and not be resolving those along the way, that those may not get caught up. And so I agree with them, and yet I also say there's a nuance to that we do need to keep the pace going.
Please go to the microphone.
Hi, I'm Jan. Actually, I'm the other co-chair of JAG. So just want to add a little bit, you know, what Edmund is trying to say. His point, because he's always so talkative, so probably sometimes you lost focus. So first, actually, his first point is he would like the ICANN board to put a resolution on the JAG report, because that has been submitted to the ICANN board since early this year. And also probably his second point, he appreciates the effort, you know, and also the progress we already made here. It's a you know, much more active project right now, universal acceptance in ICANN. And also, been said, you know, the IDN probably should be put more into priority at that point. Thanks.
Thank you. Winnie?
The second comment's also from Edmund, and it was raised during Wang Wei's presentation. Self-assessment should be a good idea, especially with some tools available. I remember there were web-based MTA, DNS, etc. tools that provided pretty good information for self-assessing how well those services and configurations are functioning. Something for IDN universal acceptance would be great. Maybe we can build on those older tools too.
Okay, thank you.
Third one. Question from Mark Svankarek. China has been a major driver for EAI. Coremail delivered the support very early, and CNNIC played a leadership role in the creation of the RFCs. Wang Wei, you have mentioned that EAI needs a push. Can you please tell us your feeling whether government mandates or regulations requiring Chinese script EAI support would be considered in order to create such a push?
Well, I think just as Dave Crocker mentioned that the whole ecosystem, okay, needs support from the majority. Maybe not all, but the major support, the majority support. I don't like the word the leader. The leader means you're alone, okay. Even if we worked together with Coremail and published a software version in 2012, but the EI application cannot be done, you know, with based on few software vendor and a few software services. I think that's why I especially want to give thanks to Gmail. I think with Gmail support, it makes now we are not alone. The team have two members. I think the government, the regulation, yeah, there needs some regulation or suggestions from the government. But I think without the community support, the government's regulation is only a regulation on the website or on their document. I think when we talk about the community support, I have an idea or suggestion for ICANN. Because I know the registrar, ICANN has many different types of members, the registry and the registrars and stuff like that. And I know many registrars, they don't make money on the based on DNS. But based on DNS, they provide many other services, just like the website services and the email services. It is possible that supporting EAI could be a specification, a certificate, a requirement for this registrars.
So on that regard, we are starting with asking the registries and registrars to support these technologies. So that's the first step regarding going to the next level. That's a more complicated question to answer, to which I don't have an answer right now. Dave, would you like to say something about this?
So
A brief comment about government requirements to adopt technologies like this. It's an appealing thought. It's one that I've heard cited for this topic a number of times in the last 2 days. But I'll remind people that there were government regulations to adopt the OSI protocols and government regulations to adopt the X400 email standards. And didn't those work very well? So the internet succeeded in spite of not having those supports, and in fact, those supports being marshaled against the internet protocols. So the regulations, formal regulations by governments and other organizations, might be helpful, but only as part of the more organized and industry-wide. And the specific idea that you don't want anyone standing alone, you want a community working on it, I think is exactly the right model.
Okay. And you know, sometimes we are proud that when we say internet is a market-driven system or end-user-driven system, we can't. But we can't just forget it when we have problems. And then we say, okay, we need the support from the government. We need the regulation from the government.
Thank you. So I just want to point out regarding Mark, who was making the question in the chat. Unfortunately, he could not come to the meeting, but he is one of our contacts at Microsoft, and he was exchanging emails with him yesterday, when he told me that he is starting a new role in Microsoft as the leader in regards to IDNs and internationalized email. So the hopefully interesting times coming from Tony.
Good afternoon. My name is Tony Harris. I am a member of the ISPCP, the Internet Service Providers constituency. One of my functions in the constituency is coordinating outreach on ICANN issues that affect the members of our industry. 2 weeks before this meeting, we conducted two outreach events, one in Guadalajara, Mexico, at the WISA event, and the other at the NANOG event in Maryland, which was last week. At both events, we made presentations on the issue of universal acceptance. We consider this something very critical to our activity as ISPs, basically because we're the people that are going to get the complaints when they don't work. I'm not too sure I didn't hear about the clearinghouse, which was mentioned. I was a few minutes late to this meeting. But just in case, my idea on something you could do springs from something that happened yesterday. We had our ISP meeting. I invited specifically a new registry, I won't say who it was, who I knew was having problems with universal acceptance, to come and present what was happening to them, to our constituency. Amazingly, this person put up on the screen an array of instances where users had attempted to interact with home banking, the two very large banks, or with platforms that had to do with electronic commerce, or let's say the purchase of services and so forth. The answers usually came back, you're not using a valid email address when filling out your details. Use .com, .net, or .org. I mean, this is brutal. This is, I mean, when I see that, we should all be running, bringing the firemen in. This is something that has to be fixed. And basically, I think it's great, that we're getting this group. You obviously know very well what has to be done. And going to the right events where you have all the industry involved with software development. Don't forget the developers of ads for cell phones. Those are thousands of people. I think those need to be addressed too. All that's going to be very useful, but we have complaints coming in every day. Are those going to some help desk which will resolve them? Are we producing trouble tickets on them and keeping those trouble tickets open until they're resolved? Because if we're not, I mean, this is a wake-up call. And if ICANN is not chartered to have such a, let's say, such an animal within their organization as a help desk, well, let's subcontract it. I mean, I think people in the industry, I can't speak, well, I'm going to be a registry tomorrow. I'm signing my agreement. But I think new registrars particularly would be interested even in contributing to this if it will solve the problem. But if we're going to hear about events of rejection of new TLDs and say this is interesting and this may have happened because of this or that, but we do not go to these banks or these e-commerce platform people and ask them to solve this, I mean, what's the point? It's not getting to your question, Dave, about the benefit, the financial benefit. I don't think it's to the benefit of any home banking service or e-commerce provider of any sort of service or product to have people come in and not be able to complete their transaction. There is a business case there, and if it's presented to them, I'm sure they would pay attention. Which brings me to the last point. Presenting this to a home bank such as the one we saw, Bank of America, if a new registry calls them and talks to their CTO about this, I mean, he's going to blow them away. They have to hear from an entity which sounds like an entity they should respect, something that ICANN sets up or which really can rapidly convince them that this is serious and that they're talking to knowledgeable people and they should pay attention to this. These are just some suggestions. And finally, I would say it's great to suggest things and walk away from the microphone. Well, we're here to help. And when I say we're here to help, I speak at least for all the internet, the IXPs in Latin America, whom I'm here to represent on one hand. And we can, whatever resources we can deploy or contribute, as we have done with these two outreach events, we're here to help. This should be solved. And, well, I'm just putting this on the table. Thank you. It's not a question, by the way.
Thank you, Tony. Thomas.
My name is Thomas Rickert, and I'm representing ICO, which is an internet industry association based in Germany with roughly 800 members from more than 60 countries, including registries, registrars, and ISPs. And I would like to speak to ICANN's role in universal acceptance. When ICANN is approached regarding this topic, some people in ICANN would respond that ICANN can't do too much about it because they are not the software developers. They are not the ones that are developing the OS. But looking at the new GTLD program and looking at ICANN's bylaws, I think requires ICANN to think about this a little bit differently, because this new GTLD program has been rolled out to provide for competition and consumer choice. This program is going to be evaluated. We know of numerous instances where not only IDN new GTLDs, but also ASCII new GTLDs are failing. They can't be used by users. And I'm waiting for the first incident to be delivered through every user through the mass media, which states the new GTLDs are great, you can register them, but whether or not they're going to work, there's a lot of uncertainty with that. So I think that ICANN needs to not only talk about a sense of urgency, but operationalize that. Looking at what ICANN has done, we see the JIC report, which still hasn't been adopted by the board. The JIC report had some concrete measures. In my view, the roadmap that was published for public comment didn't have any of these concrete measures, but just a way forward. And talking about a methodology on how to measure success, I think would be the second step after concrete steps have been taken. So I know, Francesco, that you're working very actively on it, and this is certainly not to criticize you or your team, but it's a call to action for the ICANN board to allocate appropriate resources to this. I think ICANN, particularly in the light of the assessment of the evaluation of the new GTLD program, ICANN needs to build up a track record of concrete actions that have been taken. ICANN needs to be able to list speaking opportunities where they spoke to software developers, OS developers, to browser manufacturers to ask them to do something. I can report about one case where a new GTLD operator has brought to my attention that they've approached ICANN and asked for help. You know, we know that let's say, 5 e-commerce sites aren't accepting our email addresses as valid email addresses. And the response was, well, you're a better place to make contact with them and get that resolved. I think that's not enough for ICANN to do. As an organization, we are trying to act as a clearinghouse. So whenever we are notified by members or non-members, we would send letters to the respective companies to ask them to change their system so that they can provide for universal acceptance. Discussions like this are good, but everybody in this room knows about the issue. We need to reach out to those that don't know. And from the more angles we can find from which to bring this to their attention, the better. And again, I think ICANN, at the next meeting, I think we shouldn't be talking about what plans we have, but I'd like to hear a report as to what exact measures ICANN has already taken.
Yeah, thank you, Thomas. Just a brief comment on that. Perhaps you missed the first part when I presented about what we have been doing. We started with defining the objective of the initiative in cooperation with the community. Now that we have that now defined, the next step is in which we are working now is find a communications plan to reach out to the 7 stakeholders that were identified in the roadmap. So that's the next step, and hopefully we can report more on that in the upcoming meetings. Thank you.
Werner Staub from CORE. First of all, I must say that I was really impressed about the quality of the presentations here and the content. It really deserves to go, you know, to be spread. And but can be rightly said in context, and it stands in great contrast to what we've been able to do in terms of the, you know, deservedly empty roadmap that we have presented, because we haven't, you know, figured out anything yet. So basically the roadmap that's been published about the, you know, universal acceptance is, for all practical purposes, empty. So we should update that with ideas, just, you know, as they've been expressed here. I might add some of them. One of them is specifically related to what Jonathan has explained about the public suffix listing and the debound working group of ITF. I think this is a development that ICANN should really, I don't know the word, it should make the most of it possible. We're putting enormous energy into it, and it can, because it has IANA as one of the resources, and it has the ability to get the registries to contribute. I give you an example. Rather than just making it a public suffix listing, which is important, we can make it the resource that people will use just because it's good and is useful, such as useful against phishing. Now, many people have a good reason to do that. The example I can give, for instance, you know, just recently the .bank TLD went forward, and .bank has to have a very high security policy. If a resource like the future version of the public suffix listing could have a computer-readable policy statement. I say computer-readable. And when I say computer-readable, I mean this is very old technology. You know, I was going to pull out a coin and show it to you. The idea of making something intended for humans at the same time interpretable by machines is about as old as civilization. You know, machines would be used to weigh coins. You know, that was a machine. It was very, very powerful. At the same time, you could actually see, oh, that's a coin. You know, the emperor's image is on it. You know, so both could actually recognize it. Domain names have this capability, and this is extremely powerful. So people could say, oh, it's a .bank. And I kind of learn how this should be used. Now, none of us know if we use a dollar note, we don't exactly know what are the properties that the dollar note is supposed to have, so that the counting machine at the bank would recognize and accept it. It is not necessary, just so long as it's consistent. So I don't know, I have to know all the things as a user, if there is a computer-readable method to pick it up. So DNSSEC only, for instance, could be such a policy. So if a .bank domain is seen somewhere by any machine, that machine would have a resource where it could, you know, what's the policy for .bank? Oh, all the domain names must have DNSSEC. That's relatively easy to implement. It would help about, you know, getting a actual deployment of DNSSEC, because people could say, well, it is really required. And if it is not there, it should be rejected. It should be an alert message on the screen. You could just do the same thing for TLD-wide email security specifications. You know, you could say, There are certain things that in this TLD people may do with email, because all the registrants adhere to that policy. If they don't, it's a rogue. Reject it. Because they can, in a dot bank, they could easily commit to something, such as no hidden URLs behind, don't click here, that kind of stuff. No hidden URLs behind links. They should be apparent. That's easy to police. Machines can do it. Or you could ask for email validation. Again, this would be people like to validate email. If they could basically just tap a resource depending on that list, where registries themselves put in the recommended regular expression by which, in this TLD, emails might be evaluated. That is easy to pull. It would help. Now about IDN email. Actually, IDN email could be added to that thing as a mechanism. IDN email, I've recently seen that Mozilla has tried to make a step forward, and it was a very bad misstep. So they tried to introduce what is deserves to exist, an intermediary solution. You can just type something, with the IDN extension. You will actually send it along rather than saying, it's a mistake. But what the implementation of that I've seen with Mozilla did, it put the part before the @ in Unicode, assuming that the server had been patched. Hardly any server has been patched. So basically the first reaction that a person actually trying to do, is to get, to get an error message back from the server. And the next time that person is going to try is probably 10 years later. Because not going to, if you got an error message, you're not going to try again. So if we could just get a best practice statement for an intermediary level of introduction, that would be client software only, to say that, yes, do accept what comes after the @ and translate it into the Unicode. You might, in doing so, highlight the TLD, which would resolve the problem, but we don't know which case to read. It could be highlighted that a client could easily do that. And at the same time, leave the part in front of the @ alone. Because another solution, people always have these labels for emails. It's actually not really needed. Most people have a label explaining all these things, doctor something, and they have all kinds of explanations that are in there, including the name in the respective script. So it's not really so critical. We could just go forward with that, just working on clients, and then we would not be dependent for going forward on updating all the email servers in the entire world.
Thank you, Werner. We're running out of time, and I'm going to close the queue. Do you have quick responses here?
I had a comment about the Mozilla feedback that you had, and I was wondering, was that in Thunderbird? So that was in Thunderbird. So I think what you're describing, where users were placing Unicode to the left of the @ symbol and hitting send without having any kind of feedback from the application, is less of a reflection of Mozilla Thunderbird mail client, and more of just the problem that I was pointing out in the presentation, which is there's no clear way to handle the situation where you put in a Unicode local part and the server you're sending it to doesn't respect that or doesn't accept that. So I think that's something that can be solved, but it needs coordination.
Okay, Winnie, one more question.
It's a comment from Edmund. In response to Dave Crocker's note on raising the level of universal acceptance to that of IPv6 and DNSSEC, that is directed much more at ICANN's board and ICANN's executives' willingness to speak of, advocate, and push for universal acceptance. For example, to mention it in public speeches, in meetings with officials, in its own supplier requirements, etc. Hopefully, we would have more accelerated adoption.
So I want to stress that I think doing those things is fine. Everything helps. But that we have very extensive experience with efforts like that for the examples that I gave. And they are not anywhere near enough to make a big difference. As a an adjunct, as an ancillary activity, that's fine. But none of those activities, and frankly, in my opinion, nothing by ICANN directly is going to make the change. The change is going to be the implementers and the operators and the administrators changing. And the most groups like ICANN or ECHO or any other group can do is create an environment that encourages the information, which is what the presentations comments are intended for, but also create a discussion about the incentives.
Thank you. Mark?
Mark Blanchet. Just want to make sure that people understand. There were many times that people were talking about Dbound. So Dbound is not a working group at the moment in the ITF. I co-chaired the BOF. There was a single session discussing it. There were a lot of interest. There have been a few additional meetings of some group of people about it, but not yet a working group, so we should not say, you know. And I guess they were probably looking for a few people that would drive the work. I'm not saying it's died, but I, for one, promised to write a problem statement, and I didn't. So I encourage people to actually, you know, go to the next IETF, which is in Honolulu, which is a pretty nice place to go, and, you know, resurrect or, you know, contribute for the Dbound work, which is, I think, an important part of this puzzle. But right now, it's not a working group.
Thank you, Mark. And one of the persons that is involved in that discussion is Ed Lewis from my team, the technical services team at ICANN. With this, are there any quick closing comments from any of the panelists?
I think if we want to promote the universal acceptance, ICANN itself should do something. We have a consensus, but we need to change the consensus into a strong requirement. Maybe not compulsory requirement, but a strong requirement. You know, in 2012, I was often asked, when will CNIC deploy the DNSSEC, does your DNS service support IPv6? But I was never asked, does your mail server support EAI? So if we are the member of ICANN as registries and registrars, why don't we support our own standard? That should be a requirement.
So I have just one statement, is that I'm delighted to see the resourcing put behind this. I saw Cyrus briefly was in the room, and I start to see occasionally board members taking a look at this. I parrot probably what Don said about trying to elevate this perhaps to a better pace than IPv6 or DNSSEC enjoy because of its importance. And unfortunately, it's an unpopular. We see at the scheduled time, the attendance unfortunately is lost to other things, but this is a very important thing, and it's nice to see ICANN putting effort and energy with Ed Lewis, yourself, Francisco, and Cyrus towards universal acceptance. It will be delightful to see ICANN participation in developer conferences and getting the word out so that people can start to work on the things that they don't know are broken, similar to the collision lists. Yeah.
Okay. Anyone else? No. Well, with this, thank you, everyone. With this, we close the session.